Alright everyone, welcome back to the 100th episode of the Old Drunk Friend Podcast. As always, I'm Trav, I'm joined by my pal Alex in the year 2000.
You know, I can do that voice pretty good.
Well, you should.
Should I try it?
Please.
In the year 2000.
Holy shit.
In the year 2000.
Man, you were not kidding.
It's episode 100.
You were not kidding. That was incredible. Holy cow. It's a lot of late night television.
There's like a handful of voices I can do. I can do Harry Carey.
Of course.
Here the Wrigley Field, the Gregmatics on the mound today. Have another Beechwood aged Budweiser.
I just imagine you having like your tongue has a tongue when you talk like Harry Carey.
You do have to like cup your tongue in a weird way. It's hard to describe. And I can do the auto voice, you know,
nailing it.
You know those guitars that are like double guitars, you know,
two necks then, on those things, yeah.
And then I can do the in the year 2000 voice. Oh, and then I can do the nerd voice.
Of course, the nerd voice.
I'm playing all the hits today. It's
dude,
episode 100.
Episode 100.
Playing the hits.
You can't forget. You got one more. You got a Hetfield.
Oh, yeah. That's not a good impression.
What? That's...
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. It's a classic on the show.
It's like a Dana Carvey version of James Hetfield.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Jim Brewer bit where he would do... His whole Hetfield and AC/DC impression, yeah.
Oh, man, his Brian Johnson impression is scary good.
It's really good.
Like, it's the hokey pokey bit yeah. that he does. This looks like a hokey pokey kind of crowd!
So good.
It's freaking hilarious, yeah. Look that up, audience, if you haven't seen it, because it's really funny.
It is good. I got to see him live at, he came to...
Jim Brewer?
Yeah, he came to the university... probably like in 2006 or something like that. They always had like a comedy concert once a year. Had some good
that
folks.
Was,
come, but yeah, he was cool to watch.
That would have been only what, like 5 years after Half Baked or something.
Close, yeah.
So he was still in the afterglow, because I don't think he did anything after that movie.
No, and it was all his. I mean, he's been doing the same bits since then. Like
yeah.
I saw him do a late night show about 5 years ago, and it was the exact same stuff I saw live 10 years before that. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Episode 100, we finally made it. Now, the only disappointment that I have, first 100 episodes, we were unable to get Metal Jesus on here. We tried. His lawyers and our lawyers not agreeing on a lot of things going on around here, so we whiffed on that. But I think, I'm going to say, a pretty strong 100 episodes, we'd be hard-pressed to match that with the second 100.
We'll see. And yeah, the legal situation is ugly. Our attorney is this guy named Lionel Hutz we've looked up in the phone book. I'm regretting that investment, but
yeah,
you know, Metal Jesus seems like a nice enough guy, but his lawyers sure don't like us.
They
but
don't.
Anyway, since it's episode 100, I have something prepared specifically for you, Trav.
Oh my God, I'm excited. What do you got?
Okay, so here you go. This is a bit, I reached out to some former guests and some miscellaneous others for a very special, special message. Here you go.
Okay.
Travis, I hate you. Just kidding. You know, Trav, we have a lot of fun, you and I. You're a hardworking guy, and I owe you my life. Thanks for always putting in 110%, and I appreciate both of you bringing me into the ears of your viewers. Where I remain to this day, corrupting them with lies and anger.
Hi, Trav. It's Michelle. Congrats on 100 episodes of Drunk Friend. Yay! You have been able to put up with Alex's random 90 sports references that only he understands for a whopping 100 episodes. Even I don't have that much patience.
I know, right?
So Congrats, my friend. I look forward to many, many more. Bye.
Hey, Trav. Aww. Dan from Console Wars here. Just wanted to congratulate you on 100 episodes. But the real feat is putting up with Alex for that long. I mean, that guy's intolerable. SNES drunk? More like SNES dumb. Am I right? Anyways, congratulations. Here's to 100 more.
Hey, guys. It's Rob from the Classic Gaming Podcast. I don't usually do this sort of thing, even though I get a lot of requests for it. But I do want to send you a congratulations for 100 episodes of Drunk Friend. You know, I really see myself as a mentor to SNES Drunk, and I think I really think I'm kind of an inspiration to Travis. It's really satisfying to see the awesome things you guys have done with the show, and it means a lot. It means a whole lot to me to be responsible for your success. So for that, I want not only to congratulate you on 100 episodes, but also as a friend to you both, just to say you are so, so welcome.
Aw, thanks.
Trav, how are you feeling? You got John Riggs here. And thank you for taking the grenade for all of us, putting up with Alex 100 episodes. Are you kidding me? What a feat. What a gesture. What an amazing accomplishment that you've gone through, especially with Alex.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man. Proud of you.
Thank you, John.
Hey, Travis, it's the Renaissance. Thank you so much for all the hard work that you put into the podcast. I don't know how you put up with that idiot Alex, but let me just reassure you, the outcome is well worth it. Congratulations on 100, and here's to 100 more.
Man.
Hey, Trav. Thanks for putting up with that dumbass Alex for 100 episodes.
Potty mouth.
Hello, you guys. I'm Matt the Game Ball here. Congratulations on 100 episodes of this wonderful podcast. I've been listening along since very, very early days, since you guys brought me on the show. So just know, even though I am not contributing as much as, say, a booger champ, I am there in the background listening away. And it's been a pleasure to hear you guys talk about not only video games, but in more recent episodes, movies and music. And that's been ace. Trav, Alex told me that I needed to kind of just be like, oh, you know, you are the brains behind this. You are doing so much with all of your podcasting network and everything else that he really wanted to make this about you. But Alex, I don't think I'm the person to do that. I mean, if you want to call Trav baby, I say go ahead now. And if you want to tell him maybe, you should just go ahead now. And if you want to buy him flowers, just go ahead now. Because through this podcast, you surely talked for hours. That's what I said now. Live in here! Live in me! I'm alone in it! Oh, see, I can't even remember the bloody lyrics. I had to write those other ones down. Trav, you've proved me a fool on that front. But that's how it goes. Anyways, you guys, congratulations on 100 episodes. And thank you for doing what you're doing, both here and on the YouTubes. Until next time I'm on the podcast, though, everybody, be sure, as always, to game on. Bye!
We need to get that guy in our time zone. We need to get him in a better time zone.
Hey, guys, this is Shane Graham. I just wanted to congratulate you on your 100th episode coming up.
Shane Graham?
Also wanted to say congrats to Travis for all your hard work and for putting up with what I hear is an idiot co-host in Alex. So, once again, go Hokies and congratulations.
Holy shit.
Bill Winnington here from the World Champion Chicago Bulls. Hey, Trav, I hear that you got your 100th episode coming up pretty soon here for your podcast that you've been working with Alex for the past year or so. I want to congratulate you. 100 episodes, that's fantastic. I know it's a lot of hard work getting a podcast out there, getting your guests on and coming up with the content and keeping it fresh to keep your viewers informed.
Wow.
But congratulations. I know how hard you've had to work to get all that done. So 100 episodes. Here's to the next 100, brother. Travis, take care. All the best. And go Bulls.
Go Bull. I'm a Bulls fan today.
Hey there, Trav. Colin Mockery from Whose Line Is
what
It Anyway
fuck?
Here. International comedy icon and, of course, role model to pretty much everyone since 1990.
True.
Also, inventor of two-sided tape.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I don't really get enough credit for that. Anyway, what's going on? You're probably asking yourself as waves of awe and wonder course through your body, your little heart going pitter-patter, pitter-patter.
Sure is.
Well, the lovely Alex, you know, the idiot you work with, asked me to give you this little video just to say congratulations. Congratulations on your 100th episode of Drunk Friend.
Oh, thanks.
or drunk friend. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how the emphasis is. I can only assume, because I don't involve myself in hard work.
No.
But I'm guessing doing 100 episodes of a podcast, over 100 episodes, mm-hmm. over or... Anyway, you've done a lot of work, so congratulations. And of course, you know, having to carry Alex on your back, that can't be easy either.
I know.
And Alex knows that, and that's why he sent you this lovely congratulatory... I've been drinking a little bit. This is why I can't do hard work. All I know is this is your hoedown. Thanks for all you do. 100 episodes. Let's all go yahoo. I hope this little hoedown gives you quite a lift. Alex spent $5,000 on this. Yeah. He spent $5,000 just to congratulate you both your podcasts.
Oh, good stuff.
Hope you got him something nice.
Wow.
Because he's, you know, he's kind of set the bar down. Congratulations. Stay safe.
The legend, the Colin Mockery to tie it all together. Holy cow.
Yeah. I had to outsource a bit to get some of that stuff, but that was really cool. Everybody was very eager to say how thankful they are for all your hard work with Polymedia.
Yeah.
And everyone was also very eager to tell me how much of a moron I am, which kind of scares me. But I don't know where that came from.
I know.
Everybody just piled on me. But
for a second, I thought maybe you put them up to it, but I could really feel their rage.
Okay, a couple notes here. Number one, yeah. Riggs did his from an airport. So
solid. I was wondering if he was driving a Zamboni, but you're saying airport.
Shout out to Riggs for taking the time to do that. He's the nicest guy ever.
No doubt.
And yeah, I there's no rhyme or reason to who I pick. I have Shane Graham I picked because it's Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Bill Wennington I picked because it's Bill Wennington.
when I heard Bill Wennington, I was like, oh, that was just an Alex pick for Alex. Like a 90s ass name. Why not do it? Oh, yeah. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff.
And then, Colin Mockery was just, you know, I know
he's... Improv legend,
yeah. Everybody loves that guy, so so that's. I just wanted to put that together, and then to say thanks for doing. We've been at this almost 3 years now since the very beginning of the pandemic. So thanks for taking the time to do all that stuff, all the editing, and all that, all the annoying stuff like arranging stuff and putting up with me. Sometimes I get too wasted and end up. Being an ass, making an ass of myself, but it's always a fun time to just hang out. So thanks.
Oh, hey, I appreciate it very, very much. This was very heartfelt, and very good, very awesome. I will say it's called Drunk Friend, so all bets are off. You can get as drunk as you want. It's fine. And that's why I edit. I'm good at what I do. But no, this whole podcast has been incredible. It's been a good boost for the whole Polymedia Network and for all the little hobbies that I do. It's been great. So, you know, I know it's patting me on the back a bit, but I got to say without you coming across and building the opportunity for a show like this, you know, things are very different for me. So I appreciate this I appreciate getting all these little notes from folks too. That was, I did not expect that. I didn't know what to expect. So this was very cool. I'm at a loss of words for the first time, maybe ever.
Yeah. I like, HG in particular, Hungry Garaya. She is just like straight to the point. Like
no doubt.
Yeah. Man. Very cold. What was her fee?
Was she charging by the minute for that? Is she really?
Yeah, you can't. She's in demand on Cameo. Let me tell you.
I bet, man.
Big
and
demand.
I love how Colin Mockery, improv legend, clearly not as on his game when he's hammered.
No. And he recorded that at 10:30 in the morning too. So. But yeah, I'll send these. They sent video. All three of those guys sent videos. So
that's
I'll
hook awesome.
You up with those, yeah.
Well, this was awesome. I really appreciate that. Now I feel bad that I didn't bring you anything except a sheet full of 2000 your 2000 bullshit. That's all.
Oh, that's
brought.
A hell of a segue, though. You brought me a great segue. It's what you
that's,
did.
That is what I do. I attended a ton of segue seminars over the summer. It's starting to pay off. I've really honed my game. Well, yeah, well, let me actually mention something about Shane Graham real quick while we're here.
Yeah.
funny thing about Shane Graham is that his cousin worked at the same place I worked for a number of years. He's the IT guy there. And he looks just like the guy, except just a little heftier. Like he has like a recreational ultimate frisbee body frame, like more of like I drink a ton of beer and then I'm also a little bit athletic. Not so much a kicker body like his cousin Shane.
Yeah.
But man, does that guy have some massive calves. So the calves in that family, I mean, there's a wonder all of them can kick. They just massive, massive calves. So the Graham family, really, really kicking it around. But for those that don't know, Shane Graham was on the, I would say, the national champion runner-up Hokies football team that I talked about at enormous length last episode, in fact. So that was very cool to hear from old Shane Graham. And he's a local guy, or at least he was born local. So that's very cool. Thoughtful pick.
And he spent a lot of time in the pros, too.
Yeah, he
was mm-hmm. the Bengals kicker for years.
That's true.
That's when they had, I want to say Carson Palmer, Chad Johnson, yeah. Chad Ochocinco, like that era of Bengals teams.
Right.
So he was solid for years for that team. So, he was a good player. Not surprised to hear his cousin?
Cousin. Huge calves.
Calves.
Just, oh, man.
Calves for days.
They're worth staring at, even though they're not Shane's. It's like almost Shane's calves right there, man. Now, all right, let's get into the year 2000 proper. I've lost where my sheet was. Goddamn. Oh, there it is. I had Googled to see what Bill Winnington looked like these days.
Looks pretty good. Yeah, it's easy to look good when you're sitting in front of a trophy case full of freaking championships.
I know, right? What a lucky guy. But yeah. All right. So the year 2000. I don't know where to start with this one. I would say in making this list, what a list of highs and lows for me. I feel like my 90s. I have rose tint glassed most of the 90s, but the 2000s is really where I think I was old enough to feel a little bit sour about things. And in writing some of these things down, I was like, ugh, I didn't like that song. I hated that album. Oh, that movie. So I don't know where you stand on this, but what was your life like in 2000?
It was pretty exciting. I was graduating high school and I was very happy to get the heck out of there. And never think about it ever again. So I was just like, bye. So, yeah. And then I started tech school just in July that year. So just a couple months later. So that was fun. I was actually taking classes for stuff I cared about instead of just sitting there and, not caring. So, yeah, it was fun times for me. I remember I went to a ton of concerts that year. I saw Nine Inch Nails live. A Perfect Circle opened for them, and that was the album was before that their first album was out. So they were just playing demo, the stuff that you only heard like demos on. That's another thing. Like the internet was really starting to change things at this point too. So file sharing was starting to become a big deal, and I remember getting those A Perfect Circle demos and feeling like it was just like the coolest thing ever because it's like. How would I otherwise hear this unless like some guy like handed me a CD in a dark alley or something, it was crazy. But, I don't know where to start either. There's a lot of, I guess we could start with movies. I like there's a good group here.
Okay. Let's
start with something positive.
Yeah. Let's do that. And I'm actually going to skip down to Remember the Titans first because, when I think of high school, I tend to just think of all the sports I was involved in, and for better or worse, really. I know in the year 2000, I was a sophomore in high school, and so I was on the JV football team, and a lot of our better players had been bumped up to varsity, and our JV team was awful. We went 0-8, and we scored two touchdowns all season. There were only like 15 of us, but boy, did we have fun getting trounced. We knew we had no shot every time we played, which kind of made it fun. And so the movie Remember the Titans, I think it had a cultural impact wide and abroad, but certainly if you were a high schooler playing football at the time, it was maybe even a little bit more of a fun experience to to watch that movie, and I love that movie, everything about it. And plus, it has, you know, obviously important historical implications, but it takes place in Virginia, which is where I'm from. So that made it a little more of a home team film. But I love that movie. I think it holds up, and I haven't seen it in a while, but I'd love to watch it again soon.
Yeah, I've only seen that one once. I should probably rewatch it. I saw it a million years ago, I think on TV. But yeah, it was good. It's Denzel Washington, for folks that don't remember.
And it made me hate Will Patton as a man. It took years for me to, like, you know, you ever have an actor play a role so well, like being a dirtbag, where you're like, every time you see them after that, you're like, kind of growl.
Oh, yeah. What's his name? Lane Smith, who played is his name Lane Smith? He was the evil coach in Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
And something about that guy was just like, oh, I hate that guy. Like, I just wanted him to, I don't know, I just didn't like him. So
no, I know what you mean. Yeah. Well, Will Patton also does, he narrates audiobooks, a lot of Stephen King books. And I realized I still harbored a resentment to Will Patton up through then. I had to get over it in the middle of, like, Dolores Claiborne. I'm like, listen, he's just a man doing a job. All right. Let's just listen to the book.
Yep. 2000s movies. We also have one of the best Coen Brothers movies I don't think anybody talks about nearly enough is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, I love that.
That is such
movie.
A fun, funny movie. I really like it. I think it's among their best. I think it's top three.
Easily. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a fun movie. But and great music too. Like no, like not even ironic. Like, that song ends up in my head all the time.
Oh, no doubt. That guy's also from a town over from where I grew up, Ralph Stanley. Yeah, the guy that wrote that.
Oh, yeah. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
he's a legend. Yeah, I had a buddy in college who actually bought Ralph Stanley's used VW Bug, and I got to ride around it, and I was like, man, I'm basically famous right now.
It's like the Seinfeld where Kramer ends up with John Voight's car.
That's the exact thing, yes.
You think this is John Voight's pencil?
That's how I felt. I was like, I wonder if he ever sat in the passenger side where I'm at right now.
Yeah, it's easy to think stuff like that. It's funny. Yeah. We got American Psycho is another one. Did not see it at the time, but saw it, I think, at least twice since. So many great scenes in that. And a lot of horribly disturbing stuff too.
Sure. Yeah, I read the book this year as well, and
oh, did you?
It's a rough listen.
Yeah, it's Bret Easton Ellis, and he evokes a lot of different reactions from people. I've never really liked his writing very much, but I'm telling you, the business card scene is amazing. That's nice. Very nice. Like, the way he, like, tenses up and he has to, like, control his anger over something like business cards is just great. It's awesome. We also have Requiem for a Dream. And I remember my friend from way back when this came out, saw this in the theater. He said he saw it in the theater. I remember him telling me he saw it and he said it was the best comedy of the year.
What?
He was bursting out laughing, he said, like, in the last scene, because he thought it was so ridiculous. Like, he thought it was way over the top and cartoony, and when spoiler alert, but when a certain character gets their arm amputated, like, he was just he says, like, that was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I was like, okay, buddy.
Yeah, all right. Well, how's that guy doing now?
I have no idea.
Yeah, but, okay. All right.
The music. Clint Mansell did the guy. He used to write music for a band called Pop Will Eat Itself, and then that band broke up, and he started doing music for movies. I think this was his first movie. It was among his first. I think he did a lot of the Darren Aronofsky movies, like Pi. I think he did The Wrestler too, but that transitioned him into doing movie scores, and he's always been one of my favorites.
Awesome.
He's great. And I got a hot take about another movie listed on here, Gladiator.
Is your hot take that you love it? Because I feel like people have turned on it.
Well, I've seen it twice now, and I still don't, like, when I think about it, I have, like, story blindness. Like, I don't remember what happens. It's one of those movies where it's like, I'm sure it's good. It doesn't stick with me for some reason. It's just kind of, I don't know, it just never hooked me. I like Ridley Scott. I like Russell Crowe. It has all the things that I like in it. It didn't really click with me. And I'm like, maybe it's me being snooty. So I went and watched it again, and I had the exact same reaction. I was like, I guess that was good. But, and then like a week goes by and I'm like, what happened in that movie again? I don't even remember. But
yeah, I don't remember many of the other specifics. I remember a big thumbs down in the middle of the movie from Joaquin Phoenix and that being a big deal. Yeah. I was like, damn, that guy does not like Russell Crowe at all.
Yeah. And that was, I don't know about you, but that was my introduction to Joaquin Phoenix at that point. I'd never seen that dude before. And holy crap, the guy killed it. He's the best part of that movie by far, for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that was my first, I guess, maybe that was, is that when Russell Crowe took off? Did he have anything big before?
He was in L.A. Confidential a few years earlier.
I saw that.
At least one other big movie. I think he was in a movie called The Insider.
I ended up liking Gladiator enough to, like, follow his career a bit after.
Yeah.
And then, like, nothing exciting happened after. I was like, oh, well, I guess...
Hey,
Gladiator's okay.
You're treading on dangerous ground there, because Master and Commander is one of my favorite movies.
I've never even heard of that. What is Master and Commander?
Oh, dude, it's like a sea epic, you know, like exploration. What's his name? Paul Bettany is also in it. He's
honestly,
like
I probably saw the cover and thought it looked like a nap, but you're saying it's good.
It's one of my favorites. Yes, it's awesome. It's really long. But it's really good. I think Petey really loves that movie, too.
All right. I'll give it a shot.
It's excellent. Yeah. Next, we got Memento. And I just watched this the other day, actually.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, Pearl and I did. Yeah. Pretty good. Pretty damn good.
Yeah. I love that movie. Yeah.
I appreciate it for being so wildly different from anything else. So.
And it's one that you kind of have to rewatch.
Yeah.
After you've seen it the first time, you're like, oh, and then you kind of need to go back and see if you can pick up anything that you might have overlooked the first time through. It's very good.
Yeah. And then we've got Snatch. And I'm not really a fan of Guy Ritchie, personally. It's Snatch is funny, but it didn't. That's another one that just didn't land all that well with me.
I don't know what the fuck people are saying in that movie. I have no idea.
Exactly. I have to put subtitles on. And even then, it's like, what are they talking about? I have no idea. But I understand that it's like, it's just a movie that just carries a certain energy. And it's, you know, it's just one of those movies that's just, you know, inclusive. And it builds up a world that's completely different than anything else. But it just looks and sounds sort of like everything else. But anyway. Yeah, it just didn't land with me. It's not that great, I don't think.
Honestly, have no idea what happens in that movie. I just know people.
I was gonna say, I know there's boxing.
People talk. It looks funny. I laughed a couple times, but if you ask me like what was funny about that, I'm like, I don't really know. I felt like they timed it for me to laugh. Like it was made for me to laugh, but I have no idea what I'm laughing at.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm entertained, but I don't know why.
Yeah, that's a good that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Did you like Final Destination?
I did. I think I tired out around the second one, but I thought the first one was interesting enough to get into my brain to where I saw hazards everywhere in life. And I think
definitely when following a truck.
Truck, yeah. And honestly, I still think about that to this day. Like if I see a truck with some shit on it,
every
I'm like,
single time.
I always bring up like, oh, we're about to have a Final Destination. Like I've verbed the title of the movie. So I think it had a lasting impression in that way. I don't know if I haven't seen them in years. I saw them once. I remember they had a bit of an impact. And when I saw that they came out in 2000, I was like, you know, I'm going to write that down. I'm going to see what Alex thinks about this.
Yeah, definitely a cultural thing for sure. Like they were pretty popular.
Probably didn't age well. I'd say now those are like, you know, sort of like straight to streaming service type buried in the list kind of movies. But in the day.
That makes it perfect to talk about for a podcast like this because it's very much of its time.
That's certainly true. And then one of my favorites, a Christopher Guest movie, Best in Show, came out in 2000. A movie that at the time I didn't really understand the humor. I don't think I had really, you know, other than Spinal Tap, I hadn't really been exposed to a lot of Christopher Guest mockumentaries. Yeah. But upon several rewatches, this movie is amazing. And it only gets better every time I watch it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Christopher Guest's character in particular is so good. Fred Willard, Fred Willard steals the show, of course.
Fred Willard kills it. And whoever the other announcer is with him, the
Bateman?
No, I think that was from Dodgeball.
Oh, you're talking about the other guy, Gary Cole. Yeah, the guy who plays Lumberg in Office Space.
No, I think there was another, like, there's a guy when he's judging all of the dogs, there's this British dude that's with him, and he's very deadpan with Fred Willard the whole time. And like,
oh, that guy. Okay, yeah.
But I can't remember that guy's name.
Yeah.
It's not important. But at any rate, you're right. Fred Willard steals the show, and everybody around him is playing catch-up, and it's great. That's it for the movies we got listed there, man. I think, you know, all in all, it's not a bad year.
No, that's film. That's a pretty dang good year, I think. Yeah. I'm looking at these other categories here, and there's just not a whole lot to rave about. Why don't we just go to sports real quick?
Hi, I'm Michelle from Point and Drink Adventure Podcast. Join me and my friend Pam from YouTube channel Cannot Be Tamed as we drink a little wine and talk about the media we consume. Everything from movies, video games, and even vinyl pickups. Listen on wherever podcasts can be heard and check out our YouTube channel, Point and Drink Adventure, for more extra video recordings of our podcast. Drink well, my friends. Bye.
It's not a great year. He had the Ravens beat the New York Giants in the Super Bowl, which was a really boring game.
Trent Dilfer, right?
That was Trent Dilfer. That was that Man. Ravens defense. That was Kerry Collins in the Super Bowl.
Man, imagine being named Trent Dilfer. That's incredible. And then becoming a Super Bowl winning quarterback with that name. It's like you've defied all odds.
You know, I never thought of that guy's name. Like that. He's been a part of Trent Dilfer has been a part of my life since I was like 12 years old, and I never in his I always took his name for granted.
Make so, it sound like he was your mailman or something, but
yeah for sure.
Trent Dilfer. Do you ever I know you and your brother are super into sort of sports adjacent things like all the announcing and sideline reporting and that kind of thing. I wonder if what your brother's take is on Trent Dilfer and if you both have noticed how obnoxious he is about fitting in any opportunity he can that he has won a Super Bowl. Because that is like part of his whole announcing or commentating structure is to
Is he like, a commentator still? Is he on ESPN or something? I haven't seen him in a long time.
I haven't kept up with NFL in a long time, but I remember when he used to be on a lot. It was usually like him and Steve Young and some dudes talking around a table. And it was a pissing match where Trent Dilfer would try to also be like, I have also too won a Super Bowl, so I know what I'm talking about. Like, come on, dude. You played the worst offense I've ever seen win a Super Bowl.
Oh, probably, yeah. I mean, the Bucks probably did it 2 years later. I mean, with Brad Johnson and Keyshawn, Joe Jurevicius, I think, was on that team as like their second best receiver, and Keyshawn Johnson was their best receiver, and he was, you know, just a possession guy, like a 900 yard, 60 catch guy, basically. But yeah, Ravens. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here in 2000, the worst offense to ever win a Super Bowl. We got Bob Stoops in Oklahoma winning a national title, and Chris Winkie, he was like 38 years old, quarterbacking Florida State, wins the Heisman, which is just a joke.
I'm going to have to check Chris Winkie's LinkedIn to see if he's already retired from being a real estate agent or whatever he does. God, I hate that guy.
Yep. And if I remember correctly, Virginia Tech got screwed out of a spot in the BCS that year, which is just ridiculous because everybody wanted to watch Virginia Tech. Nobody wanted to watch Notre Dame except Notre Dame's fan base.
I know.
Nobody cared. And Notre Dame beat them out.
Yeah. And then we went and played a lowly Clemson squad before their heyday and trounced them in some unspectacular fashion. So it was a sad day for us Hokies. We had to watch Chris Winkie beat us again. God damn it.
Ugh. But there's two interesting things that happened. There's the Lakers kicking off the Kobe and Shaq dynasty, beating the Pacers for their first NBA title. I didn't really like Kobe and Shaq, mostly because I was still in the afterglow of Jordan's last in 98. Both my brother and I were just like, nope. when it came to the, it's like, no, we're not really NBA fans. We're Jordan fans.
Right.
So I basically stopped watching basketball after he retired. And then when he came back, I started watching again. But
I did watch the shit out of this finals. I was a big Reggie Miller fan, and the Pacers were a good, like, all-American underdog squad. At least that's what it felt like. I rooted pretty hard for the Pacers in that series because, respect to Kobe and Shaq, but they were the villains. They're really, really good, and we needed somebody to put them in their place. But pretty fun series. I think 4-2 was how it ended.
Yes, 4-2. And yeah, that Pacers squad was pretty feisty. They were pretty good. Remember Davis? Both guys named Davis, but they weren't related. It was like Dale Davis and I think Antonio Davis, was it?
Yep, you're right. Yep.
And Rick Smits, the dunking Dutchman. Great nickname.
Dude, and a mullet every year forever. The guy loved that mullet. A little bit of Mark Jackson in there, too.
Mark Jackson, yep, at point guard.
Travis Best. I could probably name all of them.
Travis Best. Wow. I remember him from Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Austin Crozier, I think, was on there. He was like a wing.
Austin Crozier, Jesus.
Look at me. Lighten up the 90s ass names over here. I swear I don't have a website open. I'm still staring down Chris Winky on LinkedIn.
But the other thing that happened that year was Tiger Woods became Tiger Woods. And he's just started winning basically every tournament. And he won the U.S. Open by like 15 strokes. He won the British Open. He won the PGA Championship. He just annihilated everybody. It was great. I grew up watching golf. My dad watches golf all the time. So it was pretty dang cool to see like a superstar in the making. And he changed the whole sport. He made it. Tiger Woods was the first guy to ever. No, he was the first guy since Arnold Palmer in the 60s to make golf cool.
Yeah.
Like, everything about the guy was just really cool. Like he had the clothes, the look, the red shirt on Sundays. The fact that he was like actually an athlete, like an athletic guy playing golf. And meanwhile, he's playing against guys like Bob May and Duffy Waldorf. And like, you know, these guys wearing like freaking Hawaiian shirts.
Right.
It's just these big pot belly and, you know, like Craig Stadler looking guys. And, you know, just it was really cool to watch, and he completely single-handedly changed the sport entirely.
I don't know how you can say John Daly's not an athlete. That guy is so much more of an athlete than I'll ever be. Man, if you could take down a carton of Marlboros and drink an entire pint of whiskey and still not place or anything, but finish a round of golf, you're world class.
Oh man, the round of golf, he's playing 36 holes.
No doubt. That's what I'm saying.
And he's shooting 68, 67. That's how he's doing it. Yeah. John Daly's a legend. The other things I want to mention, baseball real quick, is a freaking boring series. Yankees, Mets, boo, New York.
Oh, yeah.
No thanks. And then there started to be whispers of contraction for two teams, which was like unheard of. Like, whoa, they're going to get rid of two teams? And those two teams were the Montreal Expos and the Minnesota Twins.
Oh, no, your Twins. Why, God? Why?
They needed a new stadium. They were playing in the Metrodome.
Oh, right.
The Metrodome is such a horrible venue for baseball. I loved it. I still love Dome Dogs. I miss Dome Dogs. Costco hot dogs come close, but they're not quite Dome Dogs. But yeah, that was the first time. And I remember they came out the next year, the next season. And that's when the contraction talk was like full blown. Like, yeah, we're thinking about it. Like Bud Selig came out and said that. And then the Twins ended up being really good that year. And they almost won the division. And then the next year they did win the division. They made the playoffs. And they ended up making the playoffs, I think, each of the next 3 years. And they started getting some really good teams with Johan Santana. That was when they had like Doug Mankiewicz at first and AJ Pierzynski. They were just a really complete team, but they couldn't compete with Boston and New York, unfortunately.
All right. And that worked them right out of contraction. But you know what? The Expos went to Washington.
Yeah, they ended up moving. I think the Twins' destination was supposed to be Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, would have loved to have you down here.
But
oh, that'd have been great.
Then that ended up going away for whatever. I can't remember the details, but yeah, they were supposed to move all the way over there, but that got called off. But yeah,
That would have been great because there's no baseball team that close to us, like precisely where I'm at. The Nationals are the closest, but that's still like 4 hours. Charlotte would have been 2 hours. Atlanta 6 hours, and there's a lot of Braves fans in these here parts. But no one else is really all that close.
The Braves are going to be really good next year. That whole NL East is going to be really good. But yeah, I saw their roster and like their. I don't know. That's not 2000. What the hell am I talking about?
That's another podcast all together. The baseball podcast. All right. What's after sports? What are we doing? We're staring down the barrel of gaming here. All right. Well, let's just take it away here because the PlayStation 2 came out October of 2000. I, of all of the consoles to ever have been released on this earth, that was the only one I got day one. My parents did me a solid because my nephew knocked a VCR off our television and shattered my PS1. So they're like, oh, that sucks. Ooh. Well, he didn't mean to. I was upset, but he was like four and just being four. But they were like, oh, we'll do you a solid. We know that he busted up your junk. We'll get you. When's that new PS2 coming out? We've been reading about it. When's that coming out? I'm like, are you guys serious? I should have been breaking my consoles for years. So they hooked me up, got that PS2. It was a while before I got Dark Cloud, which is a game that came out and is now the greatest hits on the PS2. But I still think it's a bit understated. I don't think it's in the it's not in the conversation for great game. It's not on the level of a lot of other games that are greatest hits. But for me, it was awesome because it's basically a Zelda slash, if you're a SNES guy, Soul Blazer game.
Yeah,
and it's so fun. I enjoy it so much. Just action RPG with some town building. It checks all the boxes.
Does the first one have crafting? I can't remember.
Just weapons. You get gems and stuff, and you can meld weapons together, make super weapons, and that kind of thing. I love that whole system. That was maybe the first game where I got real into a lot of a lot of the excess that a game would include, and really got it down to a science. I soaked all of it up. Loved it so much.
Yeah, it's still pretty good today, I think. Yeah, and Dark Cloud 2 as well. I really like Dark Cloud 2. When you said that, I wish you hadn't said that the person that broke your the toddler that broke your PlayStation wasn't 4 years old. I imagine somebody rage quitting and smashing your PlayStation after losing in Madden or something, but. I was disappointed to hear it was a toddler that broke it.
I know. Well, I was disappointed too because what are you going to do to him? I needed somebody to take my aggressions out on, but I was like, nah, you didn't mean to. I was going to go kick a tree out in the yard. But I didn't have to wait long. It was only a couple weeks till the PS2 came out, so I was all set.
Oh, nice. He did you a favor.
He really did. I should thank him.
We got Time Splitters. Yeah, buy him a PS2 now.
Oh,
we got Time Splitters.
Never played that.
No, that's a good one. That's one of the, and especially for 2000, that was a really cool title to play at home. Very unexpected to play a game that crazy. And Rayman 2, I didn't get a PS2 until after I think Grand Theft Auto 3 came out, and that was one of those games I just had to have. Mm-hmm. But Rayman 2, I completely missed at the time, and that's a pretty dang good game too.
N64 still. Putting around. In fact, got a new Zelda that year. A lot of folks were a bit shocked and confused by it, but old Majora's Mask dropped. And to this day, a lot of folks are afraid to look up at the moon because of the face it could be making at them. That's a scary moon.
Yeah. I think that's another hot take incoming. I think it's better than... I would rather play Majora's Mask than Ocarina of Time today.
I could see that because it's a bit more of a, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it seems like it just has more of a focused goal.
I guess, and that's more my speed. I think Ocarina of Time is, it scratches that Zelda itch, whereas Majora's Mask is kind of a sidestep and it's something a little different. Whereas if I want to get my Zelda fill, I don't usually turn to Ocarina of Time. I go to like Link to the Past or Link's Awakening, or even eventually I'm sure I'll go to Breath of the Wild and spin through that. But I don't go to that game for so I kind of forget about it sometimes. Whereas Majora's Mask sticks out to me as like an outlier. It's something totally different. So I appreciate it for that.
Also, we got Perfect Dark coming on the heels of the GoldenEye craze. We got more multiplayer first person shoot 'em ups.
By Rare. Yeah, it's a good game. I haven't played it in a really long time, but it's a worthy follow up to GoldenEye, I would say.
Yeah. Paper Mario, I was surprised at how much I loved that game. I didn't play it at the time, obviously. I played it probably 4 or 5 years ago. I think it holds up really well. And so far, of the Mario RPG type games, I think that one's my favorite. I've not played a ton of them, one or two, but there's something about that one I just really enjoy. It's I feel like some of the ones that followed it really burden you with extra systems, but this was still sort of an initial concept into this world, and I don't know, it's simple enough to still be enjoyed.
Yeah. You know, I wish someone had gone back and told me that, hey, Paper Mario is basically just Mario RPG, you know, the sequel, essentially. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just part of the same. It's got the same, but all I saw was oh, it's a gimmick. It's paper instead of, oh, that's so clever. And I just didn't care. I just skipped right past it. And then I played it, I don't know, in 2010 or something. And I was like, oh, wow, this is way more fun than I thought it would be. I'm really stupid when it comes to initial judgments like that, especially when it comes to N64. I wrote off Kirby games for years and years because I was like, oh, those games are for kids. And I was like, no, these games are freaking awesome. Kirby Superstar is freaking awesome. But yeah,
I know what you mean. And I do the same thing. Nintendo does a lot of that gimmicky stuff. This game's all wool, and this game's all this. And I'm like, I don't
know. Yoshi's Island is the same thing, where it's it's drawn by crayons. And then you see Super Mario World 2 in the title. And it's like, this isn't Super Mario World. What the hell are you doing? But but the game has got some really clever level design, and some clever enemy design, too. One game I wanted to mention for N64 is San Francisco Rush 2049. That was a fun one because it was a arcade port, and I had played the arcade game a whole bunch, that in Daytona, USA, and that it was cool to see the N64 get a good arcade port. N64 and racing, man, it's like that system did really well. A lot of great racing games on that system.
A ton of great racing games, and I'll never forget when we had, I believe it was this game with Jason Heine on, he was talking about how he serendipitously entered the cheat code by squeezing the controller weirdly.
That's right. That was the sequel. That was Rush 2.
Oh, okay.
And that's the one that has that ridiculous stunt level. Where
right. Yeah.
It's just a big playground with a bunch of weirdly colored shapes and stuff, and you just drive around and do flips.
And yeah, that's awesome.
Make your car explode. Yeah, it's really funny. But that's the sequel. Yeah, that's a game that's worth playing, I think. Maybe perversely so, but yeah.
Nice. All right, and then the Dreamcast, it's only about a year old at this point, but somehow still about to die. And we got some Tony Hawk 2. Tony Hawk's still killing it. Everybody's super into skateboarding. Resident Evil Code Veronica comes out. I've not played that one. I haven't really heard much about it. Have you played Code Veronica?
No, I'm not huge into Resident Evil, but my girlfriend is. I'm sure she's played it. I just saw that it got some votes for Game of the Year, or it got some picks, rather. People really liked it at the time.
I have to check that out.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure it was mentioned. And then Skies of Arcadia is great. That's a game I played way after the fact for SNES Drunk. And that's I would describe that game as a fun romp. Because it's so refreshing to play an RPG, a turn-based RPG that feels fresh. You know, you can go back to your NESs with Mother and Dragon Warrior, Dragon Quest. Yeah. And then you go into your traditional stuff. It's everything is fantasy, sword and sorcery, same old themes, same old tone. Everything's very serious, the fate of the world. And then you get Skies of Arcadia, and it's you're in ships in the sky, and you're flying around, and there's it's serious, but it's not too serious. I just really like the tone of the game and how it, just how the direction and like the production value and all that. It just really clicked with me, as somebody that has played a lot of RPGs. So yeah. It's really good at doing something different.
Yeah. It's like skipping to the third act of a Final Fantasy game where you're always in a blimp. It's like, oh, I guess we're just going to be right, there the whole time now. That's cool. also, quick little fun fact. I'm pretty sure Skies of Arcadia is where our pal Captain Drachma gets his moniker. I think there's a character in there called Drachma. So shout out to the captain.
Yes, shout out, Captain. Last is on Dreamcast. I want to mention Virtua Tennis, just for the lamest story ever. I was in tech school. I don't think this was 2000, but it was around that time. It would have been like 2001, 2002. Our friend Tom had a Dreamcast, so we went over. There were four of us, me included, and so we played doubles tennis, two on two. I teamed up with my friend Nate against Tom and some other guy, and we were getting our asses kicked. We were yelling at each other. We're like, "What are you doing? Serve it to the left!" You know, we were in bad spirits. We had a bad day. We were taking it out on each other. We were ranting, raving, and then Nate goes, "All right. Let's just forget about this. We were down match point, two sets to zero, two and a half sets basically to zero. Holy shit. And Nate says, you know what? It's time to stage the biggest comeback in history. How about that? And sure as shit, we did.
What?
We crawled all the way back from two sets down and ended up winning in a tie break. It took like an hour. The whole match took like an hour. But that's it crazy. Was really exciting. It was awesome. It was one of my fondest gaming memories ever.
That's awesome.
We turned it around. We were in such a bad mood. We had just come from school. we were really annoyed with everything. So we got out all the bad stuff, and then we decided, you know what? That's over. Let's start over and let's kick their ass. So we did.
That's
it was fun.
Awesome. I love hearing stuff like that. That's
yeah.
Some of those just little, what you think is going to be just a meaningless afternoon playing Virtua Tennis with your bud turns out to be a lifelong memory. It's
right.
You never know. You just never
yeah,
know.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. The PC was having a good time. I'm going to kick it off with the game a little further down the list here, The Sims, because
yeah.
I know you've been dicking around on the old SimCity 4 here lately.
Yes.
And I was a big SimCity fan at the time. And I remember watching MTV, and they had some promo about The Sims on MTV. Like, they paused spring break, where I'm watching all of the ladies in bikinis, to tell us about this new game that was coming out by Maxis, the makers of SimCity, that was going to let you control people. And I know a lot of my friends were like, well, that sounds pretty lame. But I was like, oh, this is the amount of control I've always wanted. This is going to be great. You get to like build your own house and kind of manage a life. Like, I'm 15. I can't control my own life. Yeah. I'll be able to get my own job in this game and kind of dictate what a person does with their life. And it didn't disappoint. I remember getting it, obviously getting the code to where I could just have infinite funds and just go wild, and it becomes a big sandbox. It was great. It was like the same rush I got from that I think a lot of people get from like Minecraft, you know? Just
yeah, that's a good
being
comparison.
Able to do all that in a game. And I don't know, I guess The Sims are still around. They're still pumping those out. But the first Sims I have great, like super fond memories of.
Yeah, I'm laughing because, I've been playing a lot of SimCity 4, and I'm describing to Pearl, like, what I'm doing in the game. Like, I got my subway system going now, and it's really starting to catch on. It's this one up here is up to 66%. It's great.
Oh, wow.
And she's like, that game seems like work. It's like, it kind of is, but I really like it, and it's basically for the reasons you stated, because it's like playing with like a weird organism that you don't understand, and you have to, the only way to understand it is by testing stuff and
yeah, well put.
Hitting fast forward and then hitting pause and seeing what happens. And then, okay, let me try this. What happens when I do this? And it's so addictive like that. And
I love it.
The Sims, I'm sure, is the same way.
Yeah. And it's kind of like SimCity is also kind of like creating art too, because your city also has a beauty to it, or like a look or a vibe to it. The Sims is just constant stress. Like, people just have constant needs. You're just putting out fires all the time, but there's something still addictive about it. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Was it crack.com? Some website somewhere. Maybe it was just like a post on Imgur or something like that, but it was somebody set up like a ridiculous setup of like a house full of people where everyone was always wearing hot dog costumes. Like even when the wife got pregnant, she's pregnant in the costume. Like the costume is like stretching outward.
No, I haven't seen that. That sounds awesome.
If anybody listening knows what I'm talking about, let us know and please send a link, because I don't know how to Google something like that without coming up with something super weird. But yeah, people have done lots of Sims stuff over the years. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
When I think of hot dog costume, I think of my guy Miles in the Discord. He also dropped a hot dog costume in our charity stream. Good, my favorite hot dog costume celebrity is my pal Miles. But I also wanted to add that there is a crack. You mentioned Cracked article. There is a Cracked article about The Sims written by Sean Baby, who maybe one day we could even get on this podcast. But he did this experiment. I think it was Sims 3, where he like. Because in Sims 3, you could affect like their fears and things. And he basically put a kid in a house with a bunch of like robots and clowns and like did a study about it. And it's the funniest thing I've ever read in my life. I read it like once every couple years just to cheer myself up. It's super good. I think the name of the baby was Turbo Saxophonic. Just stupid stuff like that. But goddamn, is it memorably hilarious.
I remember another thing. Maybe this is part of it, part of that scenario. But this guy went out of his way to create like the darkest, most bleak timeline, you know, for Sims, like the darkest, most depressing, horrible, depraved Sims house ever. And he had these people basically just like living in this house, like locked into this house without a bathroom and all that stuff. And they're painting portraits, they're painting like landscapes and selling the paintings, and just all the money was going to just the guy that owned the house, and meanwhile the family was just slaving away painting and just suffering and miserable. And yeah, there's lots of stuff out there like that, like people just messing with like, I wonder if this will work, and what happens if I do this, and you know, trial and error type stuff. But yeah,
I love it. I love all of it. It's all chaos. The PC also, going back to the PC, had a couple of solid sequels that year, Diablo 2 and Baldur's Gate 2. I've only played Diablo 2 of the pair, but both pretty good games from what I recall.
Oh, Diablo 2 is huge, yeah.
Diablo 2, certainly, but was Baldur's Gate, was the second one big a hit?
For real-time strategy, yeah. I didn't really get it at the time. Plus, my computer was so shitty that it didn't run it. But yeah, eventually I really got fond of it. That and Age of Empires, like those series, any sort of isometric real time kind of a deal was a lot of fun. So I think it's one of the all time great games ever. Like if you're making a top 100 list of like the best, it needs to be on there. It's an all timer.
Yeah, I need to get into the Baldur's Gates. I've not done that. It seems like it'd be up my alley. And then Deus Ex, another game I've not played.
I remember that was game of the year. I really wanted it because I really dug Half-Life. But yeah, I couldn't afford Deus Ex. I was blowing all my money on like guitar stuff at that point. So yeah, Deus Ex is another one I had to go back and. I don't think I ever finished it. I remember kind of just meandering my way through it, but it was good. It's interesting, especially, you know, story driven stuff, crazy plot twists and stuff like that. But yeah, it's
cool.
If that's the same game I'm thinking of.
Cool. All right. Well, speaking of guitar stuff, we make our way into music, and notably guitar less, NSYNC, but they drop in that Bye Bye Bye, which Alex, I don't know, your 18-year-old sensibilities were probably very anti-boy bands, but Bye 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 was quite the banger.
Yeah, it was, I guess.
It might sound crazy, but it ain't no lie. Baby, oh, Bye Jesus. Bye Bye.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. It's one of those songs where it's like I'm not going to seek it out to listen to it, but if it's on, I'm not going to like be boiled. My blood's not going to boil with rage or anything.
That's good. But that's healthy.
Whereas Nelly Country Grammar, if I hear that, I'm changing the channel because I'm probably going to hear it in some crappy commercial or something.
Big Nelly fan over here, Country Grammar. Play it at my funeral, please. The whole CD, front to back. Hit me with that. Oh, my gosh.
Well, that Linkin Park song, In the End, like it's become almost like a running gag at this point.
I know, right? But yeah. Man, you know, in 2000, when I had a girl break up with me, I was like, this song, yeah. Did I write this song? This song perfectly sums up all of my feelings.
Yeah, I was 18 at this point, so I was a pretty miserable person, all things considered. So, because I just had a really awful attitude about everything.
You have hated most of the music since 1993, so...
What? That's not true. 94, I remember 94 being really
That's
good.
That's true. Okay, so since 1995. But, I mean, you know, was there any... I'm just wondering, is there any songs or albums from the year 2000 that really did get you going?
Radiohead Kid A was a really big deal. I remember that was... CD was in my car. It was so... odd and different, and
I didn't like at first my first time listening to that. I was in college before I like appreciated it, but it was so like different from what I knew of them. I didn't really give it a chance.
And that's the whole idea. It's a kind of a reaction to the massive, huge success of OK Computer, mm-hmm. and this it was pretty fascinating to me. It was one of the first times that a band really surprised me in a good way. Whereas in the past, bands surprised me, like Metallica with Load surprised me in a bad way. This is one of the first times where it's like, wow, this is actually really interesting. But, you know, it's got some decent singles too, like Optimistic and Morning Bell, I think was a single. I don't know. But the second half of that album is really good. I was listening to a lot of experimental weird stuff then. Like I had really drifted into like Mr. Bungle and a lot of Mike Patton stuff, like Phantomas and of course Faith No More and stuff like that. So, and I was really starting to get into like noise rock and noise, like punk bands like Melt Banana. So to hear Radiohead make this crazy weird album was right up my alley. I thought it was great.
Nice. All right, good. And then I see you have Ween on here. I liked Ween back in the day.
White Pepper is one of their very best, and it was an interesting album because most people see Ween as like a comedy band going back to the days of like Pure Guava in the early 90s. And of course,
their name is Ween.
Their name is Ween. Yeah, good point. And they also had... of course, the 12 country greatest hits or whatever they named that, and which is probably their funniest album. But White Pepper is mostly serious. I mean, there's songs like Bananas and Blow, but even that's got kind of a serious tone to it. It's really good though. It's you can tell. I think that's the first album for me where I really noticed like, oh, these guys are like a real band, like a real group that like writes really good music.
They're a real Ween. Yeah.
They're real Ween. Yeah.
Heck yeah, man. Perfect Circle. Huge fan of a Perfect Circle. I got to see those guys live well after the fact, probably what, 2019, maybe 2018, right before their little comeback. I didn't listen to much of the new stuff, but man, Billy Howerdell, just great stage presence. Just a really good at what he does.
Yeah. He looks ghoulish on stage because he does the whole like dark wave thing where he wears eyeliner and he's like this big tall skinny guy with the big shaved head, and just the way the light comes down on that guy, he's definitely got a presence.
I know, he looks like Billy Corgan's boss form.
Boss form. Yeah. I thought you just meant Billy Corgan's boss.
At the bald factory.
Just at the, yes, at the bald factory. Damn it, Billy. He walks out in his short sleeve shirt and tie. Damn it, Billy Corgan. Get in my office right now.
Okay, Billy. Just a pair of bald Billies. You love to see it.
You know what? That needs to be a side project. Bald Billy's. You get Bill Burr on the album. You get Billy Corgan.
There you go, Billy, man. Yeah. I think we have the title of the episode tonight, though. Year 2000 and a pair of Bald Billy's. I think we just named this podcast.
And then and then you can have Billy Blanks, the Zumba guy. Is he the Zumba guy? I forget.
I think so. Yeah. If this were like Family Feud, and it was like name a bunch of Bald Billy's, like we'd probably win that round.
Let me see. Now you're gonna send me down a mental rabbit hole.
Ruined this episode.
Who else is a Bald Billy? Billy Ripken? No, Billy Ripken had hair. Maybe he was going bald.
Maybe Billy Zane.
No, Billy Zane's got great hair.
Billy Zane's been bald a few times.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I just Googled bald Billy Zane, and I have image results. Billy Joel.
Someone at Google's like, who the hell is Googling bald Billy Zane?
Bald Billy Zane? Yeah. Was Billy Bob Thornton ever bald?
Probably for something. Yeah, that's another one. But he's more of a Billy Bob, not a Billy.
That's true. Can't count it. You can't.
No. I'm thinking sports. Me and names with sports.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like some Billy Cunningham. Did he have hair? He's a player from like the freaking 70s.
I've Googled just a flat bald Billy, and I'm going to see what we get.
No, Billy Cunningham had hair. Damn it.
Not seeing a ton of results, I'll be honest with you. Billy Zane's near the top, though.
What if you did bald people named Billy?
Okay.
And Billy Corgan.
Of course, Billy Corgan.
Hey, there's Billy Blanks. All right.
Billy Blanks.
And then you got this guy. I don't know who this is.
Some of these people aren't named Billy.
Oh, Billy Zane is bald.
See?
Holy cow. He had great hair in Titanic.
The last time you saw him? Yeah. Yeah.
97, yes. Of course. I guess we should stay on track here. But yeah, I was starting to get into back to music.
Yeah.
But enough bald Billies for now. We got I wanted to add Godspeed You Black Emperor to this list because they were they're an instrumental band from Canada, from Montreal, I think. And they're like a group of like 12 musicians at this point. And they were one of the first shows I saw. I think I saw them in either 2000 or 2001. I can't remember. But it was like a 2.5 hour show. And it blew my friggin' mind. Yeah, and it was at First Avenue. It was great. Like, they sounded so good. It was 12 people on stage, but everything sounded so clear. And I was so shocked because I'd seen shows at First Avenue before. And they sounded like total ass, you know, just like too much low end. And, you know, it's like, well, the venue's really old. This is where Prince did film Purple Rain. And it's had its day. And now it's kind of on the downside. But, man, they sounded just clear as a bell. They sounded awesome.
That's awesome.
They're one of those bands that play like 20-minute songs that are all instrumental. And they have all these like waves and surges and crescendos and stuff like that. They're a really interesting band, and they're awesome to see live.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is impressive, and it reminds me of like the first time I saw Opeth live.
Yeah,
I assumed because you know it's several musicians making very intricate music. I was like, well, this probably sounds like shit live, but I'll give it a go. And it was like album quality. I'm like, these guys are amazing.
They are really, really, really skilled. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw them at the Egyptian in Indianapolis. I drove a long way for that concert. I was stoked.
All the way over there. Wow.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Me and Jake, we wanted to do a road trip.
Oh, well, if he's going, then, you know, he's he's all in on that for sure.
It was a good set. It was Opeth, Devin Townsend, and Gojira. So it was a really, really good show.
That is, sign me up for that right now. Like, I want to go see that today.
It was really good.
What album was that for Opeth around? Was that like Blackwater Park era?
No, this was much more recent. It was it Sorceress? Was that the one of the more recent ones?
I haven't followed them in years.
It was Sorceress, yeah. So that one came, I think, 2016. 2016. Yeah.
I was really into them in the early around this same time frame, like early 2000s.
Oh yeah.
I remember my brother came back from college for summer break, and he had like all these MP3s on a burned to a disc, and three of them were Opeth, and I'd never heard of them before, and they were like, wow, this is. I loved putting it on while I was playing a game like SimCity or Baldur's Gate 2, because it was something like for my brain to chew on while I was thinking and planning right. and strategizing and stuff like that. I still use some of their older stuff for that, like Blackwater Park and Still Life and stuff like that. So
yeah. I was late to the game for them, but I do like Sorceress a lot. I think it's a big departure from the regular stuff. It sounds more just like, I mean, this probably sounds like really demeaning, but it's like, sort of a heavier Jethro Tull version. Like it's heavy whimsy is like how I would classify the new stuff. But I like it. I think it's good.
Jethro Tull has this reputation, and I blame Metallica for this.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I know you got mad
at Jethro Tull for winning like the hard rock category in the Grammys or something like that one year. Jethro Tull is fine. They've got some good songs. They're not that bad. So people, lay off Jethro Tull, will ya?
Please, make it so that when I want to describe a band as being heavy Tull, I don't get dunked on, okay? That's a legit opinion to have. God damn it. Thank you, Alex, for giving me this platform and the confidence to express myself.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you think 2000, you think one thing, and that's the Tull.
I want to know the guy. I want to be introduced to the guy that just refers to them as the Tull in casual conversation. Hey, you guys want me to fire up some Tull, maybe get something going on the grill for you? Fire up a little Tull for you guys? I want to meet that guy.
I want to be that guy.
You know what? You're right. And that guy to me is the neighbor in Office Space, suddenly.
Yeah. Yes. That's basically what that guy looks like, yes.
Did you know that during her various tomb raids, Lara Croft often contracts the services of a perverted Sherpa named Greg? Did you know that Gordon Freeman actually does talk? And once you hear his voice, you'll realize why the Half-Life game developers refuse to write any lines for him. Video games aren't always great at telling compelling stories. That's where the podcast Tales of the Lesser Medium comes in. Each season, me and my co-host Travis, we drive you through gaming's most absurd narratives, picking up every rejected character and hitting every plot hole along the way. Search Tales of the Lesser Medium on your podcast app of choice and get ready to laugh at your favorite video games with me, Travis, Greg the Pervert, annoying Gordon Freeman, Barry, the Resident Evil gun dumper, and so many more wacky characters. Tales of the Lesser Medium. It's funny!
All right, let's talk about notable events in 2000. Let's talk about hanging chads. The whole year, the state of Florida was all the rage because did people know how to vote down there? It was a real question. Could they figure it out? Those hanging chads, they were hanging.
I don't know. That was all over the freaking news, and I swear that was the first news story I can remember. And obviously, of course, it's going to be everywhere. It's only the presidential election, for God's sake. But I got so sick of hearing about all that stuff.
I know.
What was so frustrating is that it was all anybody talked about, but nothing was happening. It was just, it was just the same thing every day. So eventually I was just like, ugh, like enough already, please. I will say this gives me an excuse to mention, my all time favorite comment I've ever gotten on any SNES Drunk, video. It was a few months ago. I posted a video about cheat codes, and I mentioned NBA Jam, and you can unlock and play as Al Gore in that game. This guy left a comment saying, when I first saw that, and he's from overseas, he doesn't know who Al Gore is.
Sure.
So when he saw a code to unlock Al Gore, he thought it was to unlock all Gore. So this dude thought that he could put in a code to put blood and finishers and stuff in NBA Jam.
Fuck,
and
now yeah, dude.
I want that to be a game.
No shit. We could just call it NBA Jam All Gore.
Yeah. And it makes sense, too, because it's a Midway game. Mortal Kombat was a Midway game.
That's what I was thinking. Oh my God! Somebody has to mod that. There's got to be ROM hack it. Do it. I know you can do it out there, people. Fucking put blood in NBA Jam so that when
can
I fail a guy,
shoving Bill Wennington in the back, it's just an explosion of blood everywhere.
I would never hurt our personal friend Bill Wennington. No,
I don't think he's in the game anyway. So.
Yeah, maybe in one of the versions with
there's
full
NBA
roster.
Jam. We got to get Bill Wennington in here.
NBA Jam All Gore has to happen.
Yeah, somebody out there. We need it to happen. But yeah, that's my favorite comment ever because it's number one, it's funny. Number two, it kind of makes sense in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And number three, it needs to happen. That needs to be a game.
Yes, absolutely. I will say one thing that we failed to talk about when Pam was on last episode was all of the hubbub centered around Y2K.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you have any memory of that? I mean, it was a lot like the Bush Gore thing where it was just in the news always and nothing could be done about it, apparently. But we survived it. It was not a thing at all. It was a big...
No, not really. I remember Chris Jericho debuting as Y2J and him running with that for a while. And I thought that was super awkward and goofy, but that didn't last very long, thankfully. But yeah, he as far as Y2K goes, I remember that all that stuff kind of being debunked. I was starting to get like real familiar with computer stuff at that point and just like the basic principles of how computers work. And I think most people understood, not most people, but I think people that were affluent enough with computers understood like this isn't going to be a thing. Like, don't worry about it. So I remember just kind of shrugging my shoulders like, and then nothing happened and we were all fine. So yeah,
we were fine. Yeah. And just explaining it to people, like once I barely got it, like then having to relay what I had learned about what Y2K might be to my mom, being like, Mom, it's not going to affect the microwave. Okay. We can keep the radar range. I know it's old, but it's fine.
Oh, an old radar range. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say the year 2000, decent year for some TV. We got Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, one of my all-time favorites, top five all-time for me in terms of, if you want to call that a sitcom. Sure, yeah, I guess it is. It's like it's like two sitcom. I feel like it transcends the term. It's like the sittest com of sitcoms.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch those now because it's very... It's always kind of weird to watch a show that's become such an institution in right when it first starts, because the show doesn't really feel the same way and it's still kind of getting its footing. So that first season of Curb is always, I think the first joke that they tell in that first episode is the pants tent. Where like when Larry sits down, he's like, I got a pants tent here. These pants just don't work. I can't wear these pants anywhere. And that kind of sets the tone for like the whole, for basically the whole show. And I always thought that was kind of interesting to read. That's a great show to revisit because it's still really funny, but it just hits differently early on.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to do a rewatch not long. I wanted to get to some of the later seasons that I didn't get to before. So I started over and still didn't get there. So there's somewhere in there where it loses me. I don't precisely know why, but goddamn, when it's on, it's on. I love it.
Yeah. I think the first season also had Larry accidentally tripping Shaq and then him visiting the hospital where Shaq is.
That shit's funny.
Because he like tore his ACL or something and him bringing him a bunch of Seinfeld episodes on VHS. And I was like, yes. Wow, this is so old. But yeah, it was just like a huge cart full of videotapes. And I'm like, wow, okay.
I almost forgot about it. Yeah. I remember when I saw that recently, I think it was like last year, I had that moment of this is old. This
It doesn't feel old though, right? Like the humor is very evergreen.
Yeah, and to me there's something about the fact that I think it was always on HBO that it was kind of out of my reach for a long time. So when I got a hold of it years, like maybe in 2008, it felt new to me then. And so to me, 2008 doesn't feel that old. So I don't know. There's some, like, there's a weird vortex of time around that show where it if you ask me, like, if you caught me off guard in the middle of the day and like, hey, when did Curb Your Enthusiasm start? I'd be like, oh, like 2011 probably. Like, that's kind of where my head is.
Larry David can bend time.
He can. He still looks good. It looks good. CSI came out that year. It's still going. Can't get rid of it. So much CSI.
I don't think I've seen an entire episode of CSI. I've seen bits and pieces, but...
Right. It's just so woven into the fabric of our lives that we can reference it and having never watched it.
Well, it's set... It is an important show to mention because it basically set up a template for the CBS network to follow for the next 20 years. Like, here's what we do. We're just going to do shows, procedural shows with letters.
Yes.
And the boomer generation is going to freaking love it. And sure enough, sure as shit, my parents still freaking love NCIS and all that crap. And yeah. I'm just like, all right, Chris O'Donnell, another TV show. Okay. But yeah, CSI was, I guess, you know, pretty huge.
Yes.
I wouldn't really know.
it certainly misinformed an entire generation of people about how well crimes can be investigated.
Oh, right. Yeah. The
zoom and enhance, a lot of DNA just from very small things. Yeah.
Well, DNA is magic, don't you know?
Clearly is.
And so is Photoshop.
So is Photoshop. Photoshop, you can get pretty far on Photoshop these days. Malcolm in the Middle, I didn't watch a ton of that show, but what I did watch of it, I liked.
Great show.
Pretty good.
Really funny. If you grew up middle class in the suburbs, it's a great show. I wasn't a middle sibling like Malcolm was, but it's just the way the brothers interacted, I could very much relate to.
And I got to love Bryan Cranston. And Survivor debuted that year. Yep. I don't watch reality TV, but I remember this being a huge deal, so huge, in fact, that a guy that lived down the road from us, I don't think it was the first season, but one of the eventual seasons, his name was Big Tom, and he was on Survivor and nearly won and got invited back to like a lot of the follow-up seasons and that kind of thing, and he's a local celeb. He still like will sign autographs at the mall sometimes for something that he did, what, 20 years ago on reality TV? So, big deal, apparently.
I wonder what that feels like.
I know, right?
Just being, like, that's what you're...
That's what you're known for.
Bread and butter. That's what you're, yeah.
Not getting voted off for several weeks in a thing.
On a reality TV.
On a reality
I mean,
TV
Survivor
show.
Was a pretty big deal. It was, it basically kicked off... That was another CBS show that was just massive. Mm-hmm. I just remember my mom getting really into it to the point that she bought a CD that had the music from the show on it, and she would just put that on and have it on in the house.
That's wild.
And I was just like, okay.
It's easily like, the weirdest thing I've ever heard about your family. That right there. That was wild. A CD of Survivor music. Wow.
Yes. I didn't even know the band Survivor, unfortunately, but the TV show. My mom's always had the most bizarre eclectic music taste, like from that to like, I remember she was really jamming out to Elton John and the Lion King soundtrack. She also really loves Yanni. She loves Ozzy Osbourne. She loves a couple different, she loves Master of Puppets by Metallica. She thinks it sounds really cool and like creepy and
yeah, she's right.
And stuff like that. She's all over the map. So, and she likes, what's his name? George Jones. She's into like country and like storytellers and shit like that. And,
well, I don't need your rocking chair. She likes that George,
yeah,
that George Jones.
Yeah. Well, she likes, you know, those like sad drinking songs, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she stopped loving me today.
Man, I can get down on some George Jones. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yo, he's intense. Like some of his songs are like, wow. But yeah. Do we have any food and beverage trends for the year?
No, goddamn, I looked hard and nothing showed up. I will say the one thing they would say about the year 2000 with food is that the year 2000 kicked off the gourmet cupcake phase, where cupcakes were no longer just a thing kids got at parties. You could go to like a store and get like, you know, high quality gourmet cupcakes. That was
it. I didn't even know that was a thing until I saw this show on Netflix that where me and Pearl really got into a show several years ago that was designing crazy cakes, I think. And some people specialized in cupcakes, and they'd come on and they'd introduce themselves and they say, yeah, I run a cupcake store in Southern California. And I'm like, cupcake store? What the hell? And sure enough, like, yeah, those things are starting. There's probably a couple in Albuquerque. I just never even thought of going to one. But yeah, I guess it had to have started somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the year 2000 would be the origin point. We had some nice gourmet cupcakes for our wedding that
were
really good. Yeah, and I admire the trend, but I didn't catch on for several years like yourself. Mm. And then best-selling books, we got, you know, Harry Potter, of course, still pumping them out. Goblet of Fire 2000, I know that's what you said your favorite was of the series. Pretty good one.
Yeah, I really what I liked the most about Harry Potter was all the school stuff. Once the series like got away from that and started just becoming a regular action thing, I pretty much lost interest. But the maze at the end of Goblet of Fire was good, and like the twist at the end and stuff like that. Not a twist, but just like I thought it was good, and I thought it was really entertaining.
And then also, I'm unapologetically a big Dan Brown fan, or at least I was. I've tapered off since, mainly because he's not released a ton of stuff. But I used to get really into like that historical fiction puzzle-y stuff. Pseudo, is it real? What's real? What's not? And Angels and Demons was a good one.
All I know about that is that when they did the movie adaptation, Tom Hanks' hair was just, what are you doing?
That was your takeaway?
Are you Googling it?
Man, I did not expect you to go there. Yeah, I am, actually.
Look at that. That does not look like the kind of hair Tom Hanks would have.
No, you're right.
It looks weird.
Man, you know what? I probably, when I saw it in the movie, I was like, something about that hair, but I couldn't articulate it. And now here we are, you know, 13 years later, and you've hit it on the head. It's the hair. It's not right. There's something about it. It looks like a helmet, a shiny helmet.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It just doesn't work. Don't do that hair, Tom Hanks.
It looks like 90s sitcom dad hair on a man in the late aughts. It doesn't belong.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm upset about it. I don't think I could watch the movie ever again.
I don't think I could read the book anymore. It's over.
And he does go in length about it, the hair. Yeah, there's a whole chapter devoted to it. No toys to speak of either. So that was it for 2000, year of pretty decent video games, a mix of music. You get just a lot of stuff that I remember liking for some reason or another, no longer in favor of. The movies were great. I'm going to say the movies may be the strongest point.
Yeah, I agree. The movies were excellent. A lot of great ones, but I guess gaming in retrospect, the PC really brought
true.
It that year.
That is true.
Diablo 2, The Sims, and Baldur's Gate 2. But you had Majora's Mask in there. But yeah, those are the highlights, I think.
Right on. All right, we got a couple emails we want to get to. One's pretty short. One was long. Let's get kicked off with old Ricky here. What's Ricky asking?
Yeah, Ricky says, the subject line says overrated, and he simply asks, what does it mean when something is overrated? Do people like things too much?
Interesting. I'm the kind of guy that throws the overrated term around a lot, sometimes as just a way to knock something down a notch, whether I think it's overrated or not, right? Like, I just don't want to be part of the mainstream, so I'll say something's overrated. When what I really mean is like, I just don't like it, but I want to be mean about it.
Right. It's a dismissive term.
It sure
like,
is.
I don't want to pay any mind to this.
I've been trying to cut back on that because I found myself doing that leaning on that a little too much. Instead of articulating like, why do I feel the way I feel? Like, it's overrated.
Yeah, it's overrated.
Yeah. I mean, some things are overrated, you know, that's fair.
Yeah, I think Chick-fil-A is overrated.
Chick-fil-A is gross. It's just cardboard with a pickle on it. Nobody likes that.
Yeah, I don't. It's the sandwich just doesn't do anything for me. I don't. I mean, it's fine.
Bread shouldn't be greasy. Why is the bread greasy?
I think Wendy's chicken sandwich is way better.
So much better.
I like the tomato. I like the little bit of lettuce for some crunch.
Yeah.
And I think the chicken's better. I think it's better.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I'm with you on that. So, Ricky, I think that's the point.
Yeah, I think when people say overrated, I think many people just say it to be dismissive of something, but it does still have real meaning. Like, if you think something is really, it's not that people like things too much. It's just that something might be really popular and you don't like it. You just don't agree with it. So you call it overrated.
Yeah.
Like, whereas in sports, if you say overrated, there's an actual, like, metric system you can go by. Like, oh, like, a perfect example would be the Minnesota Vikings this year.
Of course.
This has been the most insane Viking season of my lifetime. Every game is down to the wire. They're somehow 11-3. They've won 11 games. I think they've won 12 games now. I don't know what the record is off the top of my head. It's just this season is just ridiculous. They are an overrated team because their defense is dog shit and they're not particularly well coached, especially on defense. I think their offense, they're pretty damn solid. They have so much talent, but they're overrated because they've won a ton of games this year. They've had the division locked up for a few weeks now. And yeah, they're overrated. I think they're going to get smoked in the playoffs, but that's fine. It's still a fun season. And this suddenly turned into a big rant about the Vikings. I'm sorry about that.
You know what? I can bring it home because I think to tie it all together, another perfect example of something being very overrated is Trent Dilfer. I think, Ricky, if you just think about that, whenever you hear the term overrated, just think of Trent Dilfer and you'll be like, all right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dilfer. Just remember the name Dilfer. Dilfer.
Oh, what a name. All right. We apologize to all the fantastically handsome Dilfers that listen to this podcast. It's just specifically Trent Dilfer is overrated.
Yeah.
We have an email. Speaking of sports figures, we have an email from the great Patrick Ewing.
Wow.
Yes.
Star-studded show today.
Very much so. He says, ranking Nintendo consoles, and as we all know, Patrick Ewing, a huge fan of Nintendo, has always been. So Patrick wrote a pretty decently girthy email that we just can't read here on this podcast. We're going to respond to Patrick in an email, but we used that email as inspiration because what Patrick did was he wanted to get a feel for how we might rank the various Nintendo home consoles. So not the handhelds, but all the mainline home consoles. And he used what you might see typically on one of those, tierable or whatever. You see John Riggs always do videos using those tiers. Like there's the S tier, the A tier, the B tier, the C tier. And then what Patrick has tabbed the Shadow Realm, which is where I guess he bans things that he hates. And so Patrick's list was as follows. His S tier, his primo tier. He had one console in there, which was the Super Nintendo.
Well, yeah, we that goes without saying. We all know that.
I think that's fair. I think Alex is going to agree with that, as we'd predict. The next tier down, home to three consoles, his A tier lists the GameCube, the Switch, and the NES. Hard to argue with this placement. Hard to argue with the placement.
I think GameCube is probably, I think it's overrated.
You think it's a little overrated?
Probably too high there, but Switch and NES as the A tier, sure.
Feels good to me. It feels good to me. B tier, he has simply the Wii.
That works.
Yeah, that feels right. That feels right. C tier, he has the N64, which I'm as an N64 apologist, I would only bump it up to B tier if I were to tweak this list at all. I think it's a little better. I think it's underrated. I want to say I think it's a little underrated. I think people have a warped memory of a lot of the N64. There's a lot of good racing games on there. There's my pal on my other podcast, Blink, just played through Ogre Battle. That's a very competent game over there. I think there's some stuff in there. I think it's a little bit hurt by its small library, and so because there's only Nintendo stuff on there, you're just exposed to more of things you don't like. There's some good stuff in there. And then he has, in his Shadow Realm, he has banished the Wii U to the Shadow Realm. I don't know about that. I quite like the Wii U. But his arguments were sound. He had, he pointed out the second screen was a bit gimmicky. There wasn't a whole lot of games. Some of the first party games that came out weren't up to snuff. But I quite enjoyed it. When I played it, I was able to play, Mario Kart when it came out with a bunch of friends. Got that going with the Wii U. Toad's Treasure Tracker. I just have a lot of good memories with it. But I think what's happened is the Switch and a lot of the ports from the Wii U has just kind of made the Wii U completely irrelevant now. Because you can play all of what was good on the Wii U on the Switch now, so that kind of makes the Wii U unnecessary to even have ever existed. So I get his point. I don't think it's that bad of a console.
What are the go-to Wii U titles, do you think? Like, what are those? I don't even know like what those would be off the top of my head. Like I would have to Google that.
I guess the Smash version that came out was something that the folks loved, something that the kids liked. I played Bayonetta on there, enjoyed that quite a bit. Mario Kart 8 was great.
Oh, Mario Kart 8. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting list of launch titles. Epic Mickey 2, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, Arkham City.
Oh, Zombie U. Zombie U was incredible. Played that. Pikmin 3, Splatoon.
And I guess that's when they started the that's not when they started the new Super Mario Brothers, but there was a big, you know, Super Mario Brothers U game that I kind of shrugged my shoulders at.
Mario Maker, yeah.
Oh, that was the first Mario Maker. Okay.
Decent. Not exceptional, but I don't think you Shadow Realm it. I think you might Shadow Realm like the Virtua Boy.
Yeah, where's that? I guess that counts as a handle.
Probably, yeah.
By the way, just to wrap up this, and thank you so much, Patrick Ewing, Hall of Famer, for the email.
Yeah.
I had to Google and look up Patrick Ewing, what he was doing in 2000. He was still in the league at age 37, and he was playing for the Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, my gosh.
And seeing him in that jersey is just wrong.
That is weird, yeah.
Let me send you this picture.
Was Sean Kemp like, still going then?
I don't think he was. He definitely wasn't in Seattle at that point.
I was going to say, Kemp and Ewing on the same team. God, that would break NBA Jam.
Yeah, he was. He was 38 years old on the Seattle Supersonics, and I think the glove Gary Payton was still there, but
sure,
not many other people.
But yeah, Patrick, I like the email. I like your list. I think I also have the SNES on top. I think I'm with Alex. It sounded to me, reading your email, that the GameCube might have been what you were brought up with. And I think maybe for me and Alex, I could be wrong about that, but I see the GameCube as being a tier lower than the Switch and NES, just based on my own sensibilities. I was brought up more of an NES kid. I like the Wii where you got it. I'd give the N64 a little bit more love and the Wii U a bit more love, but I think that's a decent order. I think the SNES, the Super Nintendo reigns supreme overall.
Well, I think that goes without saying. Like I said, goes without saying. As I said, it goes without saying. As if that makes sense. It's the SNES is up there because it feels like there's some consistency there between the NES and the SNES. Whereas like it's the same developers, or at least similar developers. They're starting to develop like a certain style. When you play a Squaresoft game, you know it's Squaresoft, like right away when you see that font and you see the sprite work and all that sort of stuff. When you play a Konami game, you hear that music and it's like, oh yeah, this is a Konami game. Like, yeah, it's just like people perfecting their craft and having like a much bigger playground to play with than the NES, you know, a system made in like the early 80s would give them. So yeah, it feels like the culmination of like a lot of effort, whereas the N64 is like, okay, here we go. It's 3D. What are we going to do? How do we do this? Are we doing this right? And it turns out not many people were doing it right. So the Wii was novel, really. I think, do people forget that the Wii was like massively popular?
Because so it really popular. Was.
Like my freaking parents still own a Wii.
Yeah, I know. And I know the library is like kind of known for being a bit wrought with like shovelware and stuff like that. But there's just so many games. I'm all the time discovering decent Wii games. Decent. I'm not saying they're like groundbreaking or even things that, you know, Metal Jesus would tout as a
careful
uncovered Jasper. But I think there's a lot of things on there to like. I think just we as traditional gamers kind of scoffed at it because kind of like your attitude toward a lot of the games we talked about for the past few episodes, they just felt like they were geared more toward kids, and we were grown up. We wanted more of we wanted hardcore stuff. But looking back, there's a game that I have on my Wii that I'm excited to play. It's just called Pizza Delivery Boy, and I think it's like Crazy Taxi with a guy on a bike.
Yeah.
Oh, is it fun as fuck? Because I bet it's fun as fuck. I want to play it right now.
Yeah, that was a fun. That was actually when I worked at a certain place's corporate headquarters for a while. They had a Wii demo station down in the lobby. And that was one of the games on it. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. Hell yeah. All right, folks. Well, that's that's going to wrap us up. I think we've done it. I think Alex hit his limit of naming 56 different sports players. I was going to cap him at 50,
Terrell,
but I let him.
Brandon.
Damn it. He's still going. He's up to 57.
Troy Hudson.
All right. Well, let's get to 60. What can we get? What, you got two more? Some good ones?
Felton Spencer. Luke Longley.
Luke Longley.
Man. Will Perdue.
What are the chances of a guy named Luke Longley actually being that tall? It's, life is poetry, right?
Dude's from Australia, too. Like, he came all the way over and...
Dang. Came all the way
promptly
over.
Promptly plopped in the middle of the Bulls' second three-peat.
Man. We have to get him on the next cameo. But anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
We 2000. Feels pretty good to be in the 2000s. Alex, thank you for that great surprise. That was awesome. I'm going to go listen to it about 13 times tonight. So I really appreciate you doing that. And thanks for being a great co-host and continuing to do this for, gosh, through the pandemic and beyond. It's been a super, super fun experience.
Yeah, it has. It has been really fun. And thanks for all your hard work and all that sort of stuff. It's what it's all about. And, yeah, go to polymedianetwork.com. You can listen to Tales of the Lesser Medium, et cetera, Polykill, Point and Drink Adventure, Indie Quest, Uncle Doug's DVD Bin. We got Goosebumps. And then you can send an email to the show at drunkfedpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you're not interested in sending us an email, no big deal. You can give us a rating and review on a podcast app of your choice, and that'll help us out big time.
And you can find us all on social media. I'm on Twitter at TravPlaysGames. Alex, of course, is at SNESDrunk. And yeah, I don't know. That's my Trav voice, I guess. I don't do a Trav impression.
Oh, that's a bummer. I could have also been a Harry Carey.
Hi, Copwin.
The track you just composed was our friend Kulor's Bouncy Star Bounce. You can find music of his on the page with the buzz.
I see now.
Josh Leslie's shouting him out for our thirst quenching logo.
Oh, thanks for saying his name right. Be sure to catch us all on YouTube, and thanks for listening.
And we hope you have a great rest of your day. Cheers.
Oh, you threw in a cheers there, eh?
Sometimes you do the cheers. I really like it when you do the cheers.
Yeah.